moving into the fullest expression of all that you are right here, right now, in this very instant, could be a very overwhelming experience.
That's why I've given you a lifetime in which to do it. Have you ever been overwhelmed? There may have been weekends when you were overwhelmed simply by the amount of your homework, yes? Well now, imagine if all the choices in life were placed before you right here, right now. All the choices about beingness, about values, and about every important life experience. Do you think you might go into a little bit of overwhelm? If you did, it would be because you don't remember fully who you really are. Your life is the process by which you remember that. If you live life a little at a time, you will be able to better take in all the data that life is throwing at you. I know that you can understand this. If you were babysitting that little brother of yours we were talking about earlier, there are things that you would and would not let that child do, right?
But I'm not a child anymore. I know what I need to know. And besides, how will I ever get to know what I don't know if I'm not allowed to see what I do know?
You will not. You cannot ever get to know anything if you are not allowed to.
That's my point. That's what I'm trying to say.
I understand. You will not learn anything about life if your parents won't let you. What parents are trying to do, of course, is help you sidestep having to learn the hard way. They mean well, but if they are not careful, they will surround you with rules, restrictions, limitations, regulations, and guidelines that do not allow you to confront any real or important choices in life, much less deal with the results that come from you making them. The question for parents is not whether to allow their children to confront and make their own choices, but how many, how fast, how soon. This can be a decision made jointly with children.
But my parents don't make these decisions jointly with me. They issue commands, they lay down rules, they give orders.
Effective parents do not. Effective parents respect the fact that their children are simply younger human beings with all the inherent rights and desires of humans everywhere. Yet maybe your parents have only their own experience to go on. Maybe they had rules laid down by their parents. Maybe you can help break the chain by talking and listening to them.
How come adults want respect but don't give it back?
Some older adults do not know how to give respect to their children. The idea of respecting a human being who is so much younger than you and to whom you gave life itself is almost foreign to them. These are usually people who confuse respect with fear instead of associating respect with love. They respect others, people who are older, stronger, more powerful by means of their position, whatever, because they fear what could happen if they do not. People who respect others because they love them find it easy to respect their children. Effective parents walk in that understanding and operate within that framework, issuing few, if any, arbitrary rules, orders, but rather offering to their children in an age-appropriate way the chance to create with them the conditions of the life that they are living together.
So what do I do about my parents?
Sit down with them and have a conversation with them like the conversation we are having here.
That won't work. They won't listen. They never listen. They don't want to listen to me. All they want is for me to listen to them.
If that's true, if that's really true, then show them this. Say, Mom, Dad, I don't want to be disrespectful, and I don't want to get into another argument with you, but would you be willing to listen to something for me? Then give them this audio program to listen to.
And if that doesn't work?
Then exercise your freedom. Use your original power. You can ignore your parents and accept the consequences, or you can avoid the consequences by not ignoring your parents. It's your choice.
Some choice.
It's the same choice you will have for the rest of your life. Nothing is going to change. Only the players in this drama will be different. The script will be the same. Always, you will face a choice between what you desire and what you are willing to be, do, or have in order to experience what you desire. This is the process by which you will define yourself. All of your life, you will define yourself. You will decide and reveal who you are by your desires. Did you know that? If you want to know how evolved people are, look to see what they call happiness. You further define yourself by what you are willing to be, do, or have in order to experience what you desire. So what you are going through with your parents is merely a training for a process that you will go through for the rest of your life. This can be a joyful process if you truly understand what is going on, for this is the process of freedom being expressed.
Chapter 9. Sex.
Why do my parents freak out about sex? My God, they freak out.
Mostly your parents freak out about sex because their parents freaked out about sex. And their parents freaked out about sex because their parents freaked out about sex. It's been going on this way now for thousands of years. Not everywhere, not in all places, nor in all cultures. There are cultures on your planet in which sex is not seen as anything shameful or embarrassing, or as something to be concealed and not talked about, or to be done in hiding.
Yet in the largest number of places, it is seen as exactly that. Most humans are even ashamed of their own bodies, or they are simply scared of them. And so they make absolutely certain that they are covered up, and then they actually pass laws requiring themselves to be. And why? Because most humans are afraid of what will happen if they see each other naked. They imagine that they will run rampant with unresolved desires, fill their mind with unhealthy fantasies, unleash animal urges that they will be unable to control, despite the fact that in sunbathing resorts and nudist camps, nothing of the sort happens.
But why? How did it get to be that way?
Somewhere along the way, many humans convince themselves that most anything good is bad for them, and that it is in combating their desires and denying them that they please God. Somewhere along the way, they created the idea that passion for earthly things denies them heavenly things. And so they embraced renunciation as a spiritual practice. This is the practice of denying oneself earthly pleasures in order to concentrate on what is really important, which some said had nothing to do with being happy here, but rather earning happiness in heaven, or as some Eastern mystics shaped it, becoming enlightened.
Renunciation is not a good practice?
You cannot renounce who you are in order to be who you are. The first step in being holy is being whole. Remember that always. The first step in being holy is being whole. When you deny a part of yourself, you deny an aspect of yourself that I created. This is as much as saying that I didn't know what I was doing. Or worse yet, that I knew exactly what I was doing and now demand that you overcome it.
Or to use it in a different way?
Renouncing something is not using it in a different way. It is not using it at all. Sex and the beauty of sex and the passion of sex and the excitement of sex and the wonder of sex and the pure, unbridled joy and fun of sex is something that I have given you. To renounce it is to renounce me. Therefore, do not renounce sex, nor any of the good and wonderful and fun things that I have given you in life. Simply renounce any addiction you may have to them. This is different from a requirement to live without them. This is a noticement that you can.
So, because human beings thought that God wanted them to renounce sex, they have turned it into a shameful thing?
To put it simply, yes. There was a time when humans considered their sexual desires and activities to be natural, joyful functions of life. There was no shame or embarrassment around them. Then your cultural teachings changed that, making you think that to engage in sex openly and playfully and joyfully was indulging your lower nature and was unpleasing to God. Some groups and religions even taught that the only way to holiness or enlightenment was to abstain from sex altogether. Others saw that if everyone did this, the human race would disappear. So they taught instead that sex was a necessary part of life if new children were to be created, but that procreation was its sole purpose and only real justification. This meant that sex for reasons other than making babies was not okay. Birth control was not okay. Sex outside of marriage became not okay. And sex among younger people who were not in a position to become married or raise children was absolutely not okay. Having intercourse for reasons of pure passion and simple physical pleasure, to say nothing of burning true love and an urgent desire to unite with the beloved, was considered a violation of the sacred nature of sex. Today, some of that thinking has changed, and there is a more lenient attitude toward sex in many societies. Still, it can be difficult to capture the joyfulness if there must be sneaking around and hiding going on. Of course, part of what makes sexual expression joyful is a willingness to be responsible with these energies. This is true of all of life. When human beings act irresponsibly in any area of their behavior, they can bring all sorts of worries, complications, and unwanted consequences into their lives and into the lives of others. There are three core concepts of holistic living, which we will discuss later, and responsibility is one of them. When humans act responsibly, they can act joyfully. Yet even with today's more open attitudes, it is still true that sex, this natural joy of all human beings, was so condemned in the past that today in your society many people still cannot bring themselves to use the proper name for certain body parts, and they certainly don't allow others to see them. Simple nakedness is now called immodesty. Put plainly, many people are ashamed of themselves. Human beings have become ashamed of their own bodies. And when it comes to their children, a lot of parents do, indeed, freak out about sex.
I mean, really. My father has no problem with me watching a movie with blood and gore and violence and people getting blown away right and left. But a movie with naked people making love? Never.
Yes, this is a reflection of the attitudes of your society, and it is a big part of what creates your environment, in which sexuality is repressed and violence is expressed.
Which brings up another question. How come I have to pay adult ticket prices at the movies at age 13, but I can't see an R movie? That's stupid.
You're being treated as a child with regard to content, but as a full-fledged adult when it comes to the theater owner's pocketbook.
Right.
Given your society's preoccupation with making money, the tilt of this law in the direction of the business owner is not surprising, nor is the contradiction that it requires.
Humans will never stop their contradictory behaviors until they alter their priorities.
So what is the purpose of sex?
You must declare that for yourself. Everything in life has the purpose you give it. I do not give things in life a purpose. I have only given a purpose to life itself. It is the purpose of life to provide you with an opportunity to announce and declare, create and experience, express and fulfill who you really are. You are made in the image and likeness of God. God is the creator. That is the image in which you are made. That means that you are creators. If I told you what to create and how to create it, then you would not be creating at all. You would simply be obeying. Remember this always. Obedience is not creation. And so it is that I give you gifts and you decide what to do with them. Life is your greatest gift. It exists as an opportunity for you to create and recreate yourself anew in each golden moment of now, in the next grandest version of the greatest vision ever you held about who you are. Sex is another gift. Expressed and experienced responsibly, it is one of the most joyful, exciting parts of life. Allow me to repeat, so that there can be no mistake about it, that responsible sex, with every health aspect understood and every consequence considered and every care taken and every joy expressed, is what is being discussed here.
So what is the greatest version of who we are with regard to sex?
As I said, you get to decide that. Some people believe that the purpose of sex is to share love and to celebrate life. Some believe it is to simply satisfy a basic physical instinct. Others, as I mentioned, say that its main purpose is to make babies. You may agree with any of these points of view, or you may create your own.
Why am I a lesbian?
You are a lesbian for the same reason that you are right-handed or left-handed, have brown eyes, or own any other personal characteristic that makes you, you. Human genetics produces all of your individual physical characteristics long before you are born. This is very natural. You are very natural. And the way you are is perfect for you. I love you just the way you are, because the way you are is perfect for you. And that means it is perfect for me. Go now out into the world and celebrate who you are. Celebrate your skills and your talents, your hopes and your dreams, your passions and your visions. Celebrate all that makes you one with the universe and all that makes you unique. Yet when I say celebrate, I do not mean be insensitive to others. Celebration is not about pushing something in another's face or deliberately making people uncomfortable. Celebration is about the peaceful acceptance and the happy experience and the joyous sharing of who you are. A celebration is always a contribution. You can tell if what you are doing is a celebration by looking at what it contributes to yourself and others. So, celebrate and contribute. For as you contribute to life, life will contribute to you. And out of what you contribute, life will provide you the grandest experience of who you are. Remember that always. Out of what you contribute to life, will life provide you the grandest experience of who you are.
I'm confused and scared about what to make of my newly found sexual identity. I've just concluded that I am gay. How can I present that to the people I love?
Tell them the truth. If you are afraid to tell them, then say that. Tell them that you are so afraid of their disapproval that you don't feel you can be honest with them anymore. Tell them that there are certain things that you are afraid to discuss with them, and ask them if there is something that they could do or say to help you not be afraid anymore. If they cannot do this, or if your fear does not go away, then feel the fear and tell your truth anyway. Tell them lovingly what it is you wish to communicate about your sexuality and ask them for their advice on how you might best deal with your experience. If you have become aware of experiencing physical attraction to persons of your own gender and you share this with your parents, give them room for their honest reaction and try very hard not to make them wrong for that reaction, just as you hope that they will not make you wrong for your choices and decisions. Tell them what you wish to say and ask for their love, letting them know that they always have yours, no matter what. Model for them what you hope to experience from them. In short, do unto others as you would have it done unto you. This may not be easy, especially if their reaction is very negative, personally attacking or condemning. Still, remember that all attack is a call for help.
Why can't I just have sex and have it be okay with everybody? What's the big deal?
Nothing you do will ever be okay with everybody. Everybody is a large word.
The real question is, can you have sex and have it be okay with you? And the question right behind that would be, what could cause it to be okay with you?
It is okay with me. It would be fine with me. It's just not fine with everybody else. That's the problem.
Why is it a problem?
Because my parents would kill me for one thing.
They would not kill you. And they would probably not even be surprised. What you are saying is that they would not approve.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Duh.
Why do you think your parents would not approve?
Because they think that sex is bad, wrong, shameful, whatever.
That may be true. But if you become a keen student of the human race, you will observe that people often hold views that are different when they consider them as individuals from the views they hold as a group.
Meaning?
Meaning that it is possible your parents, individually, don't hold many or any of the ideas about sex held by society as a whole.
Then why don't they want me to experience it?
Maybe because they simply feel it's too soon.
Too soon? How soon is too soon? I've read that in some societies, people do it when they're 12.
There is no prescribed time for sexual initiation and sexual activity. It is different from culture to culture and from person to person.
Well, I think I'm ready.
Really? Have you looked closely at all the possible outcomes? Have you explored, really explored, the consequences of deep love entanglements, pregnancy, sexually transmitted diseases, including AIDS? Do you know all that you believe you need to know on these subjects? If you're not sure, talk about them with your parents. If you are sure, still talk with your parents. Share with them what you understand. Talk to them about AIDS, HIV, and everything you know about that. Ask about anything you don't know. If your parents don't know either, find the answers together. Explore the various methods of birth control. Do you know everything there is to know about all of this? Talk with your parents about all of this.
Are you kidding me? There's no way we can talk about this.
That may not be as certain a thing as you think.
It's certain, believe me.
Then have them listen to this.
Here we go again.
I'm serious. Have them listen to this program. Then if they still won't talk with you about it, tell them you're on the verge of making some decisions about your sexuality and that you'd rather do it with their good input than without it. And tell them that you do not consider orders good input.
You're something, you know that? You think I can say those things to my parents?
If you can't have an honest conversation with your parents, what is the point of having parents? Ask them that.
Phew.
Yep, phew's right. Tell them why you want to have sex, how you hope to deal with it in your life, the values that you have created around all that, and then ask for their honest, caring, loving input. And don't be shocked if your parents surprise you. They may be more than willing to talk. They may be totally able to hear that edicts and orders don't work anymore. And they may have greater understanding and empathy about your feelings and desires than you think.
You said in the first part of this conversation that I can have as much sex as I want, every day of my life, and it would be very okay with everybody. What were you talking about? That doesn't seem like what you're saying here.
I said that first you must understand what sex is.
And that it may not be what you think.
I think I have a pretty good understanding of what sex is. Maybe not from experience, but I've heard enough to know what's going on.
You may know enough about intercourse to know what is going on, but do you know enough about sex? If you do, then you know that you are already having sex every day. Sexual energy is exchanged between people from the moment they meet. All of you are energy transmitters, and you are sending your signals in a 360-degree circle all around you. These rays extend from you into infinity. They crisscross energy rays from other beings and from other things, forming a never-ending web of intersecting emanations that physically impact the space in which they exist, setting up very particular vibrations. Everything that exists sends out these emanations. It is this vibe that you feel and to which you react when you find yourself in any particular space. You can feel the vibe as soon as you walk into a room or enter any place. Likewise, you can feel the vibe shift as soon as the emanation from any other being shifts, to say nothing of the emanations from a whole group of beings. People react to these emanations. Animals and plants react to these emanations. The earth itself reacts to these emanations. The entire universe reacts to these emanations. The entire universe is these emanations. That is what the whole system is. It is what holds everything within the system together. It is what sends information to the system about the system. It is the essence of everything. The spectacular process through which this essence emanates from, to, and through everything in existence is called SEX, or synergistic energy exchange.
It's like the Matrix.
Yes, and as in the movie, it is also an imagined reality. The only thing different is that there is no sinister force behind it, no colony of artificial intelligence, no army of robots. The imagined reality of your Matrix is being created by you. You are the creator, and the created. Your Matrix is the combined energy field put into place by the lot of you. Its effects are localized by the power of this force field when it is intensified in any particular time and place. This force field cannot be seen by most people, although it can be felt by everyone, and nearly everyone can describe how it feels at one time or another, in one way or another. Those who are highly sensitive feel the force field constantly. Students on the road to mastery have learned that they are both feeling and creating it, and they are in the process of remembering how to use this force in their lives. Masters are those who have come to a deep awareness of all this, and it is in and from this essential essence that they live and move and have their being.
I got it. but I think you know that this is not the kind of sex that I was talking about.
It is all the same thing. We are simply talking about different expressions of the same energy. When you understand this, when you realize that you are having sex in every single moment, then you become much more aware of both the energy you are sending out and the energy that you are receiving. You begin to create your sending energy deliberately in a particular way. After you do this consistently for a while, you are said to have charisma.
So, just exactly how do I do this?
It is done with such a simple instrument, such a simple tool. The tool is called mood. The mood you are in is the mood you bring into a room and can easily affect the mood in that room. Thus, you can be said to be recreating it anew. Everything changes because you walked in. Now, the magic of mood is something that most people do not understand. You have an opportunity right now to come to an understanding of it that can change your whole life.
Will it improve my romantic life? That's what I'm talking about here.
Believe me, this has everything to do with the kind of synergistic energy exchange that you were talking about. In any kind of sex, mood is everything. Now, the magic of mood is that it can be creative and does not have to be reactive. Most people think that mood is their reaction to something outside of themselves, something that exists or has occurred. This, they say, has put them in a certain mood or even ruined their mood. Those who know the magic of mood understand, however, that mood need not be only a reaction, it can be a creation. That is, you can decide ahead of time what mood you want to be in, before you have any idea of what conditions exist or what events are going to occur in a particular time and place. By choosing your mood ahead of the moment, rather than after it, you impact the moment in an incredible way. You begin to create the conditions that exist and the events that occur. Your mood changes the moment rather than the moment changing your mood. Your mood changes people rather than people changing your mood. Suddenly, with regard to how you are experiencing your life, you are at cause in the matter. You are no longer at the effect of life, but at cause. This simple switch can alter every waking moment.
That's great. That is just like, wow. I never considered that. I never thought of things like that. I mean, that was a pretty far-ranging discussion, considering we started out talking about making love.
We never stopped talking about making love. Remember this always. Love is not measured by how many times you touch each other, but by how many times you reach each other.
Whoa.
Yes. Whoa.
Not all teenagers feel that sex is important at this stage in their lives. I, for one, think that way too much is made of it. I have no intention of having sex until I get married.
That's very okay. Have you decided why?
Well, sure. Because I think that sex is a sacred part of the human experience and is only to be shared inside of the sanctity of marriage.
Who told you that?
My mom. But I agree.
Cool.
I never heard of a god who said cool before.
God speaks to people using language that is natural for them. Don't you ever say cool?
Yeah.
Cool. So do I.
So I'm right about sex and marriage?
It's not a question of being right. It is a question of what works for you. You are always defining yourself by every thought, word, and action.
Yes, but what do you think? What does God say?
This might be a good time to tackle the whole subject of God and how it is with me.
Chapter 10, God.
Who are you?
Who am I not?
I don't understand what that means.
It means there is no one and nothing that I am not.
You mean you are everything and everyone?
That's what I mean, yes.
Even bad people and bad things?
There are no bad people and no bad things.
Only people and things that you have called bad.
That's the same thing.
To you it is. To me it isn't.
Now what does that mean?
It means that we have different values. It means that we have different understandings. It means that you've made judgments, and I don't make judgments.
God does not make judgments? I thought that's what God did.
Well, the human race has been thinking that for a long time, but it's not true. It's one of those misunderstandings I've been talking about. It's an illusion. The illusion of judgment, followed by the illusion of condemnation. It has been written, judge not and neither condemn.
You mean you really do not judge? You forgive everyone, no matter what the sin?
I do not forgive anyone. That is the first thing you must understand about me. I will not forgive you ever for anything that you do. Once you are clear about this, you will have a new understanding of God, and you will be able to interact with me in a whole different way. I do not forgive anyone because there is nothing to forgive.
You must be kidding.
No. Forgiveness is only required when someone has been hurt or damaged. You cannot hurt or damage God.
I can't hurt you? Doesn't it hurt you when I sin?
No. Any more than it hurts you when you see a toddler sin by doing something he is not supposed to do. Do you feel damaged? Do you feel hurt?
No.
Of course not, and neither do I. You cannot injure me in any way. I am all. I have all. I will always be all. There is nothing I need or want, nothing I require to be happy. I do not need you to do or not do something. I do not need you to be or not be something. I do not need you to have or not have something. I do not need you to worship me or fear me or love me.
But you do need us to obey you, right?
There is nothing I need from you. Therefore, nothing I am asking of you. Therefore, nothing for you to obey. Do you think I am up here making up rules for you to follow, regulations for you to adhere to? You are making those up. Since I cannot be injured in any way, I have no reason to ever feel angered or upset. Forgiving you for something you have done is unnecessary, because nothing you have done could ever injure me. And in the absence of injury, there is no need for retribution or justice. Even your own courts have held that you must prove injury before you can seek justice. If the court holds that you have not been injured by another, that other will not be punished just for the hell of it. Now, if your own human courts would not do this, why would I?
But what about if I do bad things to others? Maybe I can't hurt you, but I sure can hurt other human beings, and I have. That's what most people feel they need to be forgiven for.
Yet you do not need to seek that forgiveness from me. I have not found you as having done something wrong to me, so I have no reason to forgive you. I understand why you have done everything you have ever done in your life. I know what you were thinking and why you did it. When you understand why someone did something, even if you don't agree with their reason, it becomes very difficult to remain angry with them. In my case, I never became angry in the first place. I understand too much. I know too much. Anger is not something of which I am capable. The level of my comprehension does not allow it.
I still feel bad about hurting others.
Then seek forgiveness from those others, and seek forgiveness from yourself.
There are some things for which I just can't seem to forgive myself.
Do you want to know how to be able to do this?
Yes. Tell me how, yes.
Forgive the same offense in others. Forgive the same faults, the same foibles, the same offensive character traits, the same sins in others that you see yourself having and committing.
Will that work?
It is the magic formula. You heal your heart when you heal the heart of others.
Okay, maybe so. But how can I ever erase the bad things I've done from your judgment book so that all would be forgotten and I could start over?
My wonderful young friend, there is no judgment book. That's what I'm trying to tell you all here. I am not Santa in the sky making a list and checking it twice so that I can find out who's naughty and nice. That is not who I am. That is not what I do. It may be a surprise for most humans to learn that there is no such thing as right and wrong. There is only what works and what doesn't work, given what it is that you are trying to do.
How can that be? Isn't killing wrong? Isn't cruelty wrong?
If killing is wrong, if cruelty is wrong, what about wars? What about hitting someone who has broken into your home and is taking your baby?
That's different. That's self-defense.
Oh, so you mean that there are situations in which killing and cruelty are not wrong?
We don't call self-defense killing or cruelty. We call it self-defense.
Changing your terminology does not change your actions. It merely justifies them.
Are you saying that we should not kill or inflict injury in self-defense?
That is not what I'm saying. And that is for you to decide, not me. You are creating your own reality with such choices. These and other decisions that you make about your species and how all of you will live together is what creates the world as you know it. It is not for me to decide how you are to create that world, then see if you will do it and punish you if you do not. I have given you free will to create the world of your highest imagining. If this is the highest imagining that you can come to right now, then so be it. The point being made here is that absolute right and absolute wrong do not exist. A thing is wrong only because you say it is wrong, and a thing is right for the same reason. And human beings change their minds about what they say is right and wrong all the time, depending upon the circumstances.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. That's the point. There is nothing wrong with changing your mind about what's right and wrong, because that's what works, given what you declare that you wish to do. If you declare that what you wish to do is live in peace and harmony, then saying that it's wrong to hurt or kill someone in self-defense might not work for you. One day, it may come to pass on the earth that it will not work to kill or hurt someone in self-defense, but that could only happen in a very highly evolved society in which it is understood that the self does not need to be defended because it cannot be hurt, damaged, or destroyed. This is not currently your understanding, and what works for you, your ideas about right and wrong, will always be a reflection of your current understanding of things. What you call right is merely the best way that you currently know how to achieve what it is that you declare you wish to experience.
So right and wrong are a changing thing?
Yes, changing and shifting from time to time and place to place. It may not be wrong to drive a car at 120 miles an hour if you are trying to win the Indianapolis 500, but it could be wrong if you are trying to get to the grocery store. It all depends on what you are trying to do. If you are driving west in the United States and you wish to go to Seattle, it is not morally wrong to turn south and head for San Jose. It is not a question of right and wrong. It is a question of what gets you where you say you are going.
Wow. Now I get it.
Right and wrong, therefore, do not exist as absolutes, but only as momentary assessments of what works and what doesn't work. You make these assessments yourself as individuals and as a society, given what you are wishing to experience and how you see yourself in relationship to everything else that is.
What does that mean?
If you see yourself as one with all others and with everything else that is, you will have one set of ideas about what works and what doesn't work in your thoughts, words, and actions. If you see yourself as separate from all others and from everything else that is, you will have another set of ideas. Everything depends on what you are seeking to accomplish, put more broadly, what you understand to be the purpose of life, and how you experience your relationship to all that exists, how you define who you are.
And this is where beliefs come in.
Exactly. Your beliefs about that produce one set of standards. Someone else's beliefs about that will produce another. Society's beliefs as a whole will produce a cultural story that will play itself out again and again throughout the course of your collective history. And your collective history has proven that.
Don't many of us look to our religions to give us our highest beliefs?
Yes. And your religions have taught you about separation, need, superiority, failure, judgment, and condemnation. These are the beliefs that keep you stuck in a system of absolute right and wrong, and in a cultural story of separation that is killing the lot of you.
Since we're on that subject, how is it that a God of mercy can be such an isolationist and so intolerant to other views? How can a God of infinite mercy condemn anyone for anything? Why condemn for eternity those transgressions that are momentary?
I am not an isolationist, nor am I intolerant. I think that you are talking about a different God here. Perhaps it is the God about whom you have been taught. That God is largely a figment of your collective imaginations. And I also, as I just said a moment ago, do not condemn anyone for anything. I have been saying this over and over again to the human race through many sources for many years. Many of the people to whom I have given this truth have passed my words on to the world, including spiritual leaders such as Pope John Paul II. At a papal audience in Rome on July 28, 1999, the Pope declared, "Eternal damnation is never the initiative of God. It is the self-imposed punishment of those who choose to refuse God's love." That statement by the Pope was accurate. What it means is that I will not ever undertake to punish you, but you can punish yourself. You can create your own hell. Self-punishment is simply your decision to judge yourself or to deny my existence and my presence and thus separate yourself from me.
The Pope said eternal damnation is never the initiative of God?
Yes. He also made some other very courageous pronouncements about heaven and hell during that same period in July of 1999. You may check your own newspaper accounts of all this. Those press dispatches reported his statement that heaven is not a place but an intimate relationship with God that can be experienced partially on earth. Also reported in the press was the Pope's statement that the idea of heaven as a place in the sky came from metaphorical biblical language, contrasting the dwelling place of humanity and the dwelling place of God. But the Old Testament makes it clear that God cannot be enclosed in heaven, that God hears human prayers, intervenes in human history, and that, through grace, believers can ascend to God's presence, the Pope said. Finally, regarding hell, Pope John Paul II said that eternal damnation is not a punishment inflicted by God from outside. It is an internal state of separation from God. And then came the Pope's most astonishing statement of all. Whether or not any human beings are in hell remains a real possibility, but is not something we can know, he said. Until now, no Pope and no Christian teacher of any renown has ever come even close to suggesting that there could be anything but absolute assurance about souls being in hell, which these teachers declared to be the place of eternal damnation. Now, here comes the spiritual leader of the largest Christian church on your planet to declare that he can't be sure about that. Other religions, too, have changed their tune and softened their official rhetoric about hell and damnation in recent years. And these newest statements from the world's spiritual leaders offer more important signs that your worldview about me is changing. Now you can stop living your lives in constant fear of the Lord and have a friendship with God instead of a fearship with God. This is not a small shift. This is not a tiny alteration. This changes everything.
In what way?
Our relationship can at last be one of love, not terror. The exciting thing about this is that when you stop fearing me, you can stop fearing each other. You can begin to believe the highest truth about God, which is that I would never hurt anyone. And the highest truth about life, it is eternal, love is all there is, and there is enough of God and of life and of all the stuff of life for everyone. The highest truth about each other, you are all one. And the highest truth about your own blessed being. Its purpose is to evolve forever, and it cannot be destroyed under any circumstances at all.
This changes how you relate to me, how you relate to yourself, and how you relate to each other. It changes the world.